Hello and welcome to Let's Talk Robotics. I'm your host, Nikki Rousseau, and it's my pleasure to introduce you to the robotics community in Australia. Today is episode 144, and I'm delighted to be joined by Mark Pavak. Mark Pavak is the primary inventor of FBR, that's Fast Brick Robotics Automated Bricklaying Technology. He is an aeronautical and mechanical engineer with over 32 years experience working on the development of high technology equipment ranging from lightweight aircraft to heavy off-road equipment. He has 27 years experience working with Pro Engineer 3D CAD software, as well as high-level mathematics, including matrix mathematics, robot transformations, and vector mathematics for machine motion. Mark has also worked extensively with design, commissioning, and fault finding on servo-controlled motion system, achieving very high dynamic performance. Mark, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks, Nikki.
It's been nearly 3 years to the month since we last spoke. So delighted to have you back. For those of our audience that haven't heard our first podcast, would you like to tell us about your journey and your interest in engineering?
Yeah, so the whole Fast Brick Robotics journey started back when I was a kid, I guess. My dad is a mining surveyor, and he used to bring home optical equipment, you know, even when I was little. And as a child, he brought home a theodolite that was in pieces, and I put it back together for him. It was quite an old one, one of the first ones ever used in Western Australia. And I got really interested in sailing and became an aeronautical engineer, and eventually started my own business, employed a bunch of different guys doing consulting work. And then we started making automated equipment, and in particular CNC machines. And I had this idea to combine optical measurement and CNC machines to build much bigger CNC machines than had sort of typically been built. But the idea I had at first didn't really have a market. And then in 2005, there was a building boom in Western Australia. And one of my customers said, "Oh, Mark, you should an automated bricklaying machine. That'll be easy."
Of course.
And naively, I thought it might be easy as well. But I had a look on the, I Googled how many bricks get laid in Australia, and saw that back at that time, there was 1.3 billion bricks a year getting laid. And it's many times that now, of course. And, you know, at $1.30 a brick back then, thought, wow, there may actually be a market for this thing. So I put together a small private company, and through a lot of ups and downs, and through the GFC in 2008 and so on, we eventually did a reverse takeover and became ASX listed in 15, and then built our first robots. We'd already had prototypes built, but we built our first social ones that could go out and build actual houses. One of the big challenges in the construction industry is that builders need a 100% solution. You know, 95% is not good enough. And that's what we deliver. And, you know, as far as we're concerned, we're one of the only companies in the world, you know, in the 3D printing or robotic construction space that delivers a 100%, you know, good enough for people to end up living in afterwards, and with the robots doing enough of the work that it makes it viable.
So tell us about the Hadrian X, and how many iterations did you have to go through to get where it is today?
Yeah, so I guess it depends what you call an iteration. You know,
I guess from scratch.
Yeah, there's millions of iterations if you count every little thing that we've had to change and improve and you know, iterate on. But broadly speaking, there's been three main iterations for Hadrian X. The very first one was built on an excavator base, more as a technology demonstrator. We knew that out in the field that would have some application, but would also have a lot of limitation. It was built on a 25-ton excavator, which meant it had to be floated, you know, from site to site. But excavators are great machines to customize, because you get a lot of stuff with them at a really good price. Then the next iteration was what we called Hadrian 109, which was the first real sort of commercially viable one. And that was built on a truck with an articulating arm, all folds up inside Hadrian, and that worked really well. And the next iteration really is just an improvement on that, which is our, we're now calling the next gen Hadrian X. And that's a little bit bigger, has more reach, can handle bigger blocks, and of course is much faster than the previous version, effectively about twice as fast, which means we can now build a house in a day. It's really quite amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, that is amazing. So typically, what would a bricklayer, how long would it take a bricklayer, like comparatively our to Hadrian and to a bricklayer? How many bricks would they lay?
Yeah, a good team of bricklayers, you know, depending on how many they are in the team and how big the house is and what the weather conditions are like, could take anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks to build a house. And also typically what happens is they often have multiple jobs on the go at the same time, particularly when it's really busy, you know, in some kind of weird fashion to try and keep a range of different projects happy and progressing. The building industry often works on a lot of different projects. So, you know, that it's not unusual for that 2 to 6 weeks to blow out to 2 to 6 months. So being able to come on site and do the whole job in a day really is a massive advantage for the construction.
And I think possibly from COVID, the supply chain, I don't actually think has corrected itself. My son also works in the building industry and he tells me like it's just a continuous drama, you know, like getting supplies, material. That would make a huge difference for you guys as well.
Yeah, well, fortunately, we've got really well-established supply chains. We work with very large brick and block suppliers, so we've never had an issue with that. And because we're working with robots more so than humans, we've had a pretty good sort of uptime and availability. So we're able to schedule our work, you know, really quite effectively. Probably the biggest issue for us has been from the other aspects of the construction industry, you know, getting concrete slabs done on time and all that sort of thing. All the other trades which have to work around us, you know, plumbers and site works and that sort of thing. So that's a challenge, but we managed to work through all of those issues.
So when I spoke to you about 3 years ago, I think you were on the verge of doing a community centre, if memory serves me. But tell me, like, what's happened in the process in your market in West Australia and, for that matter, the rest of Australia?
Yeah, so back then, I think we just built our first house up at Dayton, which was a display house, and we put in a commercial centre in Byford.
That's it.
Yeah, since then, we did a very large childcare centre up at a suburb called Amberton up in the north of Perth, and that just turned out absolutely fantastically. And since then, we've built five houses down in Wellard with three different builders. Just to sort of demonstrate how the robotic setup can work in industry. We've done a 16 townhouse development in Willoughby, which was really quite a challenge and showcasing what robots are capable of, a really complex sites, you know, on the commercial sort of scale, with a lot of challenges such as a sloping site. So things had to be built in stages with retaining wall story and all that sort of thing. So that was really, really good for us. Just to showcase what Hadrian's capable of. We're now out at St. James doing another 8 townhouses, which is sort of more typical of what might happen in an urban infill situation. You know, where a big, you know, sort of domestic block has been sort of repurposed to go from a single dwelling to having 8 townhouses on it. So very tight site to work on, but we're going quite well on that one. And of course, we've just got our next gen Hadrian up and running. And what's really exciting about that is we're going to the US. So we're heading over to Florida fairly soon. We're working with one of the biggest building materials suppliers in the US, CRH. And we're doing some demo sites over there. And we've got basically a pipeline set up, which should eventually lead to about 300 robots with them joint venture in the US. So that's sort of pretty significant.
That's fantastic. Congratulations. That is actually huge news.
Yeah, well, it's massive. And, you know, we've got a few things to tick off. They've been over here and saw what we called our factory acceptance test. You know, we had a target of laying at 285 blocks an hour, and we actually demonstrated at 330 blocks an hour.
Oh, wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah, so we just, knocked that one out of the park. And what we have to do in terms of demonstration in Florida is, just go over there and build 10 houses, which are typical of what they build over in Florida. They're not too different from what we've been doing over here. So, I won't say it's a box ticking exercise, but, there's nothing overly challenging there. They do a lot of the details in the construction are a bit different to how we do it here. But at the end of the day, they're block houses, with steel reinforcing and that sort of thing, for the hurricane areas over in Florida. But we've built exactly that kind of stuff over here. So, it's going to be interesting to go over to Florida and work over in that environment. But we're really confident that everybody over there is going to be talking about us and love our product. And we'll be launching over there.
Tell me, are you focusing predominantly on building clusters of home, like 8 or 9 at a time? Or if there's an individual out there thinking of building a house, can they approach you and go, look, I've got the standalone property that I want to do?
Yeah, well, in Australia, what we've been predominantly doing is just demonstrating the capability of the robotics. And at this stage, it's a little bit like a chicken and the egg kind of thing. We need a lot of robots to get out there and service the construction industry properly. And a lot of the big areas of the construction industry, really want that high production capability. And until you've got that, they're sort of a little bit loath to get too involved in it, because they have a system which is set up, to work the way they've been doing it. And there's also a lot of advantage in the bigger markets to having a robotics. Because, for example, here in Western Australia, where it's been taking, a long time to build a house, a process we really should be 6 months, has been stretching out to over 2 years in some cases, many cases actually. Whereas in Florida, the typical building cycle there from groundworks to somebody moving in is 90 days.
Wow.
And if you can take out a couple of weeks of block work on that, that's really significant. To take out, say, 40 days. Well, they actually do it a bit quicker over there because they have really big teams of masons, and they're sort of more like a production environment where they go in and build a whole suburb out. Whereas here in Australia, we typically have, on any given street, every house will be built with a different builder on a different time frame and a different design. Whereas in the US, they're sort of much more productionized. To be able to save 10 to 20 days on a 90-day cycle is really significant. Whereas to save 10 days on a 2-year cycle, it sort of gets lost.
Yeah, it does. Although, I was reading in an article that more than 2,000 building companies have closed down in Australia in the last financial year, and I don't think that's going to be the end of it. And just talking about time lags and cost escalations, I think the new way now of costing is that they're just going to give you like a standard charge, and then it's cost on top of that. And I don't know how anyone's going to afford to build a house like that. Certainly I won't sign up for it.
Yeah, there's a lot of challenges in the construction industry, and you hit the nail right on the head there, Nikki, because most of the building contracts are fixed price. And then what happened, with all the stimulus which happened, COVID pandemic, there was a massive increase in building activity, and along with that the prices really went up. But a lot of builders were locked in at fixed price contracts, they're thin margins at the best of times. Yep. And, that's only sustainable for so long. What we see now is that, the houses which are getting finished are the ones where, there's been some sort of compromise between customer and supplier, mm-hmm. to look at altering prices. But the other problem you've got is, the banks want to lend against a fixed price contract because, most people or most customers, particularly first home buyers, they're sort of maxing out their borrowing capacity, and it's really dependent on the valuation, and the bank just does a simple sum, what's the valuation of this property? What am I going to lend on it? And that's, getting finance for a new build is basically the same as getting finance for an existing house. They have to go to the lender and, there has to be a valuation involved, and the bank has to look after their risk. Nobody can blame them for looking after themselves. If they didn't, they'd be broke as well.
No, I agree with you, and I think the flow-on effects from this, the repercussions are going to be untold to us because we've already got an immigration crisis of too many people in the country. With, well, certainly in Melbourne where I'm based, there's just simply not enough housing, which of course now is now developed into the rent debacle that we all have. That, you know, we've got young people being homeless and on the street because they can't afford housing. It's just an ongoing cycle now.
Yeah, we really have a lot of housing issues in Australia. And you hit the nail on the head. I'd go so far as to say that we probably haven't got enough people in Australia. But the real issue is that there's a lack of housing demand. And a lot of it is kind of almost impossible to fix, unfortunately. You know, it's one of the issues which is dear to my heart, and I spend a lot of time thinking about it, you know, and a lot of the situation that we're in has come about, you know, through the taxations and the way the banks lend, and the way that builders are financed, and all these sort of challenging different aspects. And we've got a system which, you know, has worked in the past, but, you know, it's clearly had issues. But to fix a lot of those is almost an impossibility. You know, like a vast majority of Australia's, you know, personal wealth is tied up in houses with the advantageous capital gains tax situation, you know, and you go, well, we could fix that, but how can you fix that? You can't go in and do wholesale, you know, draconian tax law changes. Be grossly unfair to the entire economy and the banks and everything. So,
Well,
you know,
and half of our federal government will have to sell all of their investment properties. Let's not start there.
you know, and there's all sorts of crazy stuff. You know, I look around at the number of people that are living in completely inappropriate housing, you know, and my family members are guilty of this. You know, I've got aunties and uncles and parents that are living in massive houses, and there's two people living in them.
Yeah.
You know,
But
two people living.
you can't tell them that they have to share a house with someone like this. I know it is.
No,
I
well, exactly. And you know, the alternative accommodation for them, you know, what would be more appropriately sized isn't available.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're kind of stuck there. And there's a vast amount of houses which are investment properties. You know, you can drive around, you know, a lot of the really good real estate around the place, and it's not lived in. You know, you drive past it, there's no lights on, nobody's home. You drive past a lot of, you know, apartment blocks in really nice areas. And you look up there and you go, well, there's clearly nobody living there. I can't see a TV on in the whole place.
Yeah. Well, look,
No lights.
in Victoria now we have our infamous land tax that's now kicked in, and it's penalizing people that don't actually use their properties. And you know, rightly it should, because it's the same situation here. There are properties that you can clearly they're vacant, and it just adds stress to a market that's already stressed. How can you have a house sitting there empty? But I think this is particular to WA because I visited there about 4 years ago, and in the suburbs of, I don't know, just further up from on the other side, so going up north, like there were basically streets that you can go down, and you know, no one lives in these houses, and that's not fair to a community that's already struggling with housing.
Yeah, it's kind of a crazy situation, but you know, I'm not here to get involved in politics. I think they're really difficult structural problems that, you know, all the parties and all the politicians in Australia are going to have a real challenge to fix. What I will say though is that, you know, robotic construction really offers a possibility of fixing the issue on the supply side. Unfortunately, the governments don't appear to be very pro robotics in Australia, and I really would encourage them to look at that. And particularly, you know, I feel like we're on the door of a new age where a lot of issues in construction have just been thought of as being too complex for robotics to be able to contribute to it. But, you know, what we're seeing now is, you know, with artificial intelligence and just the way that that is advancing, you know, I think there's a lot of concentration on AI. On some really difficult problems, and there's a lot of easier problems in the construction and manufacturing industry where that kind of AI can be applied. And you know, there's already some fantastic companies in Australia doing that. know, for example, there's Verbotics out of Wollongong, you know, got AI for programming welding robots, you know, and making it viable to use a welding robot for a one-off construction. Whereas, you know, just a few years ago, everybody thought, oh, it's too time-consuming to program a robot to build one thing. But, you know, now it's not. And we'll get the same sort of thing in construction. You know, we use a little bit of AI in Hadrian to assist operators with some of the tasks which they used to have to do manually. And that's been just amazing. But, you know, by and large, what we're doing is a deterministic problem, you know, placing a block or even working out where a brick or a block needs to go in a house is all something which is very amenable to classical mathematical algorithms. But bricklaying, and that's one of the reasons that I saw bricklaying as being very amenable to robotics, but it's essentially a mass customization. You know, it's very similar to mass production in that every brick that you lay is basically the same, but it's customized in that every house that you can be a bit different, but there's, you know, we come up with software that automates that process. But generally in the construction industry, most of the construction industry, the challenges are that every trade has to deal with the inaccuracy and the problem preceding trade leaves behind. And robotics really gives you that opportunity to make every stage of that process accurate and repeatable. And then once you start roboticizing or automating one phase of that construction, it enables the next phase to be automated.
Yeah.
So for example, here in Western Australia, about 20 years ago, there was a big effort by some of the builders to try and introduce truss roofs onto the houses. But what they found is that the brickwork was so inaccurate that, yeah, you could put a truss roof on, but then when the guys came in to do the eave lining or whatever, they would have to trim every sheet because you might have a house which is tapered, say, 100 millimetres over its length. Nobody notices it. But because the slab was initially laid out, you know, not quite as accurate as everybody would like, or the force moved, you know, when they were pouring the concrete, the brickies just built to the edge of the slab. And then traditionally the stick roof builders would come along and they would just put up the roof, you know, to wherever the walls were. But to install a truss, yeah, they could put the truss on, but then that meant the eaves were not the same width all the way along, you know, so that would introduce an inefficiency there, or it would look really stupid because you'd see a tapered eave. So that sort of wasn't able to be as broadly adopted as it could be. And consequently, even today, 20 years later, the majority of the roofs in Western Australia are what we'll stick built. And when we built our first house with Hadrian, we said, well, we want to put a truss roof on it. And we sent the drawings to the truss guys and we said, can you manufacture that and deliver it for the day after we build it? And they said, no, because we want to come out and measure it up first. So, you know, that's traditionally how they've been doing it in Western Australia, is if somebody wants to put on a pre-made truss roof, they wait for the brickwork to go up. Then somebody comes out and measures it and goes, you know, they make the adjustments and then they build the trusses to suit. And we said, no, well, we won't need to do that. The robot will be accurate. And they said, yeah, we don't believe you. Anyway, so they came out, measured it up and they went, wow, this is the first building we've seen that's actually the same size as what they said it was going to be. And consequently, since then, we've been able to just the trusses and they can turn up, you know,
and so
in good time with what we built.
If they come and they measure it up, how long does it take them to manufacture it then? Because then there's another time lag there.
Yeah, exactly. That can be weeks.
Yeah, like
months even.
Yeah.
Weeks or months. All this stuff should be happening in parallel. And that's just one example. You know, there's a whole bunch of other trades which come in and wait to see what was actually built. You know, like kitchen cabinet makers, you know, they won't, unless it's a very simple design where it's just something straight going against the wall and it doesn't interface to anything else, which is a pretty plain sort of kitchen and not reality. You know, usually they have to make cabinets that are going to fit in a certain space or whatever. And, you know, they'll come in and measure it up or template it or whatever. And with robotic construction, you don't really need to do that.
So how long is the development that you've done from slab, pour to lockup to someone moving in? How long has it taken you?
Well, that's not really a fair question because the rest of the building industry here in WA is not geared up properly to take full advantage of it.
Okay. So if we take into account, say everything was working as it should, everyone was lined up there, the ducks in their row, like how quick could you do this if everything was synced according to?
My guess is that it should be practical to do it in about 80 days.
Wow.
So less than 3 months. You know, and that's based on what they're doing in Florida at the moment, where they're doing the whole process in 90 days.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, just having robotic bricklaying could save another 10 days on top of that.
Yeah.
And then if you optimize some of the other things which happen, you know, for example, you know, bathroom fit out, you know, they're only just starting to do what they've been doing in the commercial industry, you know, for putting hotels and apartment blocks with a crane in a whole bathroom pod sort of pre-finished. You know, you've got the opportunity to really speed things up. And, you know, anybody who's ever had a look at a production line for anything, you know, the speed of assembly of, you know, even really complicated equipment can be sped up, you know, measurably compared to hand building something.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to suggest this to Fast Brick Robotics, but maybe you should just have a plumber and all these other people in your crew as well, and you don't have to outsource it. You go, right, you get ready, we're building this house, and get on to it.
Yeah, well, one thing at a time, Nikki, you know. I would love to do that, because there really is a glaring opportunity for builders to really shorten up that time frame. And, you know, at the end of the day, time is money, but you really do have to have, as you said, all your ducks in a row. And the Australian building industry now is really quite complicated to manage. The builders in many situations are really a contract manager.
Yeah.
They're using a whole bunch of different subcontractors to different phases of the work. And they've got to manage all of those. You know, most of those subcontractors are doing work for a number of different builders or for, you know, a lot of different projects for the same builder, and coordinating all of that is quite a challenge. And, you know, the reasons for that are the ups and downs of the construction industry. You know, the builders are basically forced into using subcontractors because they couldn't maintain a workforce in the quiet times.
Yeah.
And then consequently, in the busy times, everybody's struggling to use the same subcontractors, and you get these massive time blowouts.
It's crazy. And it just perpetuates. Instead of just having something, I know, like, we've got all the solutions. I don't actually work in the building industry. But I have to ask you, did you see these two guys that were concreters in Victoria that went to a client's house and ripped up the driveway because the guy, there was a payment discrepancy of $3,000 that he made an initial payment of $10,000, but then just didn't want to, there was a real lag about the $3,000. And these two concreters were actually a bigger construction company that lost $14,000 last year, and they just went, that's it. They're hardworking Aussie blokes, and they're not standing for this. And they went and they ripped up the driveway. So,
well, I don't know the details about that, so I won't comment on it. But, you know, who can blame them, really?
No,
I don't know both sides of the story. I guess, you know, if the glue wasn't so strong, you know, we could use Hadrian to come in and take the walls away.
No, I think it was only the driveway. And I think they got the police involved, and the owner of the house was saying, please don't do it. No, they went, they've had enough. Like, they just ripped up their driveway. Yeah. Look, they're desperate. So, you know, talking about robotics, and of course, in field robotics in Australia, this includes all sorts of other robots like drones and things. Have you seen an increase in the use in the last couple of years? Are you across all of this? I would think you've got a real interest in what's happening.
Yeah, massive interest in it, Nikki. And, you know, there's a huge amount of robotics going in, and a lot of it is unseen to the general public. But, you know, for example, there's some fabrication companies in Perth who build the big trays for the mining trucks. You know, we're talking about hundreds of trays a year, and that all used to be done manually, and those guys are interesting robotics now. And the challenges, you know, which they've had with those sorts of things is they're big fabrications, and there's not many that are the same. You know, there's a lot of dump trucks in Western Australia, but they're all kinds of different models. So, you know, they might build 10 of one particular type. You know, these are big things. You know, they're sort of anywhere from 30 to 50 ton fabrication. And, you know, when you weld up something like that, you know, it does a lot during the welding process, and robots in the past can compensate for that. But the technology is there now that they can. So we're seeing robotics, you know, in factories, in areas where it wasn't perceived as being viable, or now it is. And, you know, just the mining industry and the agricultural industry are massive adopters of robotics. Not a lot of the sort, you know, the stuff which hits the media, you know, like the drones and all that sort of thing. But certainly the autonomous trucks here in Western Australia are becoming, you know, almost ubiquitous. Autonomous drill rigs for drill and blast, you know, most of the drilling and blasting, you know, for the nearly billion tons a year of iron ore mine is very autonomous now. There's hardly anybody out on the benches anymore. Those drill rigs are just out there automatic. And rail is starting to go autonomous as well, all the heavy haulage up north, you know, which is massive, massive industries, but it's thousands of kilometers from where the general public is, you know, and most people just, you know, hear about, you know, the teleoperation centers, you know, that Rio Tinto and, you know, BHP and FMG have got around the place, and somebody might know somebody who works there, you know. Nowadays, if you know a miner, it's more likely that they're working in Perth, you know, controlling some sort of remote operation stuff, which is happening up north, be it, you know, mine planning or geology, you know, a lot of that stuff which used to happen out in the field is now done either autonomously or a lot more autonomous. All the data's coming back to Perth, you know, back to head office without the geologists or the surveyors or the mine planners having to be up on site. You know, all that stuff's back here now. Yeah, it's just, you know, just across the board in so many industries and the really productive industries, you know, just getting more.
Yeah, I think Australians are one of the world leaders in field robots, and that, and you're right. I think for the general public, they don't know about it and they don't see it. But the interesting thing is the mining communities are still, you know, they still need people. It's not as though with this technology they've gone, oh, we don't need people anymore. They always need staff and are always recruiting for new people to join them.
Yeah, and the jobs are changing, and I think they're becoming better jobs.
Yeah.
You know, instead of having to be out on site in some, you know, really hot, dusty, dirty, isolated environment, a lot of that stuff is being done remotely now. And there's a lot of things which, you know, we were talking about it before, where AI is enabling things that were previously thought to be very difficult to automate can now be automated, or at least made a lot more unattended, you know, so that humans only have to get involved in very exceptional circumstances.
Yeah.
You know, we had something like that with Hadrian, where, you know, an operator would basically have to intervene once in every 5 cycles. Well, we've got, with the introduction of some AI to look after that particular situation, you know, we're down to like 1 in a couple of 1,000 cycles now. So most builds, the operator doesn't even have to think about that, whereas before it was something that they had to do quite a lot.
Yeah, and that's freeing the operator to do something else for you, because they're specialized people working for you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it means we can, you know, we're using operators that need less training than they used.
Yeah. So, Mark, what's next for FBR?
Yeah. So, as I mentioned before, you know, Florida's the big thing for us. You know, the US is such a massive market, you know, just across the board. They're generally sort of 10 to 15 times whatever market you have in Australia, you know, straight off. And a lot of markets are a lot bigger. So, we're really excited about that. And one of the things which we're now on is sort of decreasing the cost of producing Hadrians. You know, up till now, they've been sort of basically one-off units, you know, with the intent that they would be mass-produced. But now we're starting to, you know, move into that mass production phase and looking at how we can, you know, really dramatically reduce the cost of producing these so that we can get more out the field. Yeah, so that's really exciting for us.
It's sort of a chicken and the egg thing again. Like, you need the units out there, but you need more units to bring the costs down, you know. So congratulations. I'm very excited for your journey. It's been absolutely fantastic catching up with you again. And just to our audience, Mark would have been on a Robotics in Construction webinar by the time you're listening to this. So do go to our website if you're interested in that, because you'll have some slides that you can actually follow the journey of FBR and some of the work. So yes, please make sure to join us there. Mark, any closing thoughts from your side?
I'd just like to really see robotics more widely adopted in Australia. And I'd also remind people to look, you know, beyond the hype. You know, there's a lot of hype around 3D printing, you know, and humanoid robots. But there's also fantastic things happening in the traditional industries of, you know, subtractive manufacturing, where it is all robotic, but you never see on the news or hear about it talked about very much. But, you know, there's amazing CNC machines and laser cutters and all that sort of stuff out there, which are, you know, highly automated and let you make stuff in amazing ways at much lower cost than you can with 3D printing and robotics. You know, if you had a process which you thought 5 years ago you might be able to automate, but it was going to be a bit too hard to program or there's too much variability in it, you know, now's the time to be looking at it with AI and automation and robotics. You know, we're just at the, I think we're on the knee of a very exponential curve where you're just going to see it, you know, in all kinds of industries. And while there's a lot of hype around humanoids, you know, it's probably going to be a good 10 to 15 years before, you know, Figure and Optum Prime and all of those yeah. robots are, you know, out on a construction site lifting 20 kilo bricks. It's one thing to be picking up a piece of paper and putting it in a wastebasket, you know, for a 5 minute demo. It's another thing to be handling 80 tons of bricks on a building site to build a house out in 45 degree heat. But, you know, all the conventional robotics which is out there, you know, your cobots and all that sort of stuff, it's just getting easier and easier to use every year, even every month. You know, there's new software coming out that's just making things which you thought were impossible possible. So it's a really exciting time to be in automation and robotics.
I couldn't agree with you more. And just in closing, where can our audience reach you?
Yeah, really simple, www.fbr.com.au. And there's a contacts thing there, and always happy to look at emails that come through.
Fantastic. And I assume you're on LinkedIn as well, and they can connect with you there and send some messages. Mark, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you again. Congratulations on your expansion into the US. I'm really excited and flying the Aussie flag for how spectacular we are here and the work we're doing.
Thanks, Nikki.
Great. To our audience, thank you very much for joining us again for another episode of Let's Talk Robotics. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and I look forward to your company again.